Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Sacré bleu!
It is Monday, which means it's time for the From Free Football Podcast. Me, Adam Bolt, with the one and only Dave O'Brien.
Oh, yeah!
And, of course, Lawrence McKenna.
Hello.
How are you, Lawrence?
Good. How was Love Box?
Love Box was good. I was there on Friday. It was pretty good. Frank Ocean seemed to draw mixed reactions, let's say.
Why, Adam? Everyone loves Frank Ocean.
Everyone does love Frank Ocean, but maybe it wasn't suited to this huge festival main stage vibe. Maybe, you know.
I said that.
Yeah, him being half an hour late probably didn't help as well.
And why was he? I wonder why he was half an hour late.
Who knows, mate? Who knows? He does things his own way. I think that much is clear. But apparently, on Saturday, Dave, you had more fun chasing status. Oh.
Yeah, chasing status. Kano was very good.
Kano
was Kano was pretty sick on the mic, obviously in his ends in East London, in Stratford. Dropped loads of stuff. He came on later on as well for one of the chasing status songs. So it was a very good day out. Lots of fun. Bit of Jess Glynn as well, who was pretty decent. And then singer that I've never heard of that does the "We Were the Alarm" ringing in my head, which was always fun to dance to. So I had a great time and met a few people there that came up and said, "You were Stack Monday, bro," and I was like, "Ah, that's not me, mate." After sinking like the 13th pint, yeah, it was great. Great to meet everyone as well.
How many people did you?
That's
get?
Not me.
How many people
See
did you get recognised by?
That's for all.
A few.
A few, you don't, okay.
Yeah, enough. So shout out to those guys.
Shout out to the people who recognise Dave. There you go. Guys, thank you so much for joining us on today's podcast. We're going to be going through all the transfer talk and done deals from the past 7 days. Before we get to that, though, it's time for Hole of the Week.
Well, have we got one?
We've got two reviews this week on iTunes. Guys, if you want to be Hole of the Week, all you have to do is review and rate the podcast on iTunes. You can do so by clicking the link in the description of this very podcast. Today's contenders are iBrowning93 from the UK and King Tommy J. First up, iBrowning, who titled his review "The Podcast of Dreams." I'd like to start with a big thank you to you guys. You bring me closer to football analysis whilst adding a comedy twist to add to the great content. Adam is the best presenter going. It's just not the same without him. When he's not there, my heart drops. Congrats on the engagement, by the way. Thanks very much. Dave is undoubtedly the king of stats. His tactical analysis is impeccable, and despite him being a United fan, he adds great knowledge and banter to the podcast. Lawrence is very passionate, and that holds a lot of stuff together. His love for Xabi Alonso is great, and his hate for Arsenal Fan TV is hilarious. Chris is great to listen to. He literally knows
it's not hate, it's contempt. Just want to put that out there, right?
And he gives a great insight into the game, as well as a very good tactical analysis. You guys inspire me in many ways, and thank you for that. Hopefully one day, my football podcast will be as successful as yours. 5 stars from iBrowning93 from the UK. Thank you very much. Very kind words there.
I wonder what his football podcast is. Do you think it's Guardian Football Weekly? Or?
Yeah, probably. Must be. Also, we had King Tommy J writing in, who says the front three is like a Ferrero Rocher.
Brilliant.
The front three is like a Ferrero Rocher. Every second of content is mouth-watering, and at the end of every topic, there is a rich, smooth, indulgent centre. You look at a Ferrero Rocher, and you know it's going to be good. just like the front three. Both ooze greatness, and when there's the opportunity, you just need to consume it. The front three is the Ferrero Rocher and the Guest of the Gold packaging. It's not needed, but it does make it a hell of a lot better. Keep it up, lads. Smashing the football podcast game, says Tom, a.k.a. Tim/Forrest. For me, it's got to be King Tommy J there. As good and as kind as I Browning's review was, using that metaphor of the Ferrero Rocher as the front three, I've never seen it done before. Would you agree? We should give it to Tom.
Brilliant.
Give it to Tom, yeah, Hole of the Week.
He was clearly hinting at what he wanted the whole time, so yeah, I appreciate that.
And I respect that, and he's got himself some Ferrero Rochers. So Tom, a.k.a. Tim, a.k.a. King Tommy J, drop us a direct message on Twitter, and we'll get back to you and get you some Ferrero Rocher. You've earned them, mate. You have earned them.
Good man.
Let's crack on then. Let's talk the done deals from the past week and all the rumours and gossip and all that good stuff. There's only one place to start, though, guys, and that is the shock news that Leonardo Bonucci has joined AC Milan for £35 million. That's the reported fee. The transfer's not done yet. The fee has been agreed. I mean, the question on everyone's minds right now...
It looks pretty done, though, doesn't it?
...is why?
I think it's a combination between a player being unhappy and maybe a player being pushed out of the dressing room by Allegri. Allegri did drop him earlier on in the season around, I think it was around April time. They had a big falling out during one of the games. I think it was maybe Palermo. And that just continued. And there were reports at the Champions League final at halftime. Himself and Barzagli had a bit of an argument there. And the atmosphere wasn't right. And of course, Bonucci did join Juve from Inter Milan. So he isn't one of the sort of, you know, founding fathers of this team. You know, he's not one of the first guys that Conte brought in when he was building this 3-5-2, the very expansive 3-5-2 that we know and love. But maybe there's just a clash of personality there. You know, there's reports as well that he doesn't want to leave Italy because his son is unwell and he's getting treatment in Italy. So that's why the move to Spain, the move to England wasn't on. But it's crazy. In the same week that Kyle Walker moved for £50 million, Bonucci's just gone on the radar for 30 mil when he's probably worth 100 million working on the Carl Walker rhetoric.
Yeah, I mean, that is the thing, Lawrence. Once you sort of understand the context, as Dave explains there, maybe there are reasons that make sense on a personal level for why Bonucci has moved on to AC Milan. But that fee, surely Juventus could have demanded more for a player who's regarded as one of the best, if not the best, defenders in the world.
That's a good point. I think he did want out of the club, though. I think they were... I mean, the fact that he only wanted to move within Italy and the fact that he could only go then to a couple of clubs was always going to be part of it. And because of that, I think this has partly shown the strength of Juventus as a club and the way that they can go. You know, Dave Wright is worth a lot of money, but to Juve, it shows that they can flex and let a player go for that price, I think. And weirdly, to a team that is probably going to be considered one of their closest rivals next season.
I mean, that is the thing, isn't it, Dave? You would expect now AC Milan to be challenging for the Serie A title. I think that's 10 signings now this summer with a Bonucci takes it to.
Good God.
I mean, would you expect them to be able to challenge Juve now, given the business, given the expenditure this close season?
Yes and no. I think there's going to be a number of teams. There's going to be four teams. There's going to be Napoli, Roma, Inter and Milan that will be competing for the title. Of course, Atalanta, the glory team of this season, will find it harder to do what they did last season. Obviously, Frank Chiesa, who's gone to AC Milan. But I like Milan. Milan's one of those clubs that is going to have a part of everyone's heart who enjoyed football during the 2000s because of the way, the style of football, the Kakas and that. And it's nice to see them going back. The only thing that I'd question is 10 signings. That is a lot of new faces. That's going to take a while for them to get adjusted. And by that time, have Juve already won the league? Probably. You know, they'd lost Bonucci, but they've got Bonatia. They've got Rugani, who arguably Rugani has a higher ceiling than Bonucci. And these are these things that Juve have just, the plan, the business just all works out. And even if they've just lost one of the biggest rivals, one of the biggest players to their local rivals, or not local rivals, or their rivals in a way, it seems fine. Like, it seems like they're fully in control, even though they've lost two big players. Dani Alves, one of the best players in the Champions League last season. Of course, Bonucci, one of the best centre-halves. You know, the players that need to sort of show up for Milan, of course, Andre Silva, who was fantastic for Porto last season. It's kind of like the goals are going to be on him. Carlos Bacca is so inconsistent. But the style of football will be nice. You know, the likes of Rodriguez, who I've been raving about for season after season after season, he'll go into Italy and he'll tear up that left wing, whether it is from left wing back or left back. So they're really starting to build something. And Bonucci, you know, probably will be made captain. Next to someone like Romagnoli will be perfect. You know, a young Italian defender that is good and has a lot of good potential qualities, but playing next to someone like Bonucci that is a serial winner, that's very, very aggressive, that's excellent on the ball, will help his game as well. So I think there's a lot of positive things for Milan signing someone like that. It's almost like a personality. Like, they've got to this stage, now they can do it. It's not like, you know, Manchester City signing Robinho to say, yes, we're here now, we're going to take you on now, we're going to sign this, you know, winger from Real Madrid and so forth that's been massively inconsistent. No, we're signing the best defender in Italy, and he's going to come in and he's going to be leading the team on. What we know with Montella is he does love playing out the back, which is, of course, Bonucci's biggest strength. So the transfer makes sense. Whether AC will win the league, I don't think so. I think Napoli and Roma have a better chance. I think both of those clubs, you know, Napoli were massively ahead of Milan in a way in terms of tactics, in terms of management. They haven't lost many of their players this summer. We haven't lost any of their players, should we say. And of course, Roma, Monchi coming in, Di Francesco coming in. That's going to be a nice 4-3-3 style, progressive. You're obviously losing Mo Salah, but they've done well in the transfer window to replace that. So Serie A, I've enjoyed Serie A the past 3 years. I think it's going to be another really cracking Serie A.
Milan might not be done yet as well. There's reports today that they're trying to sign Renato Sanchez on loan, potentially from Bayern Munich.
Let someone else have someone, mate.
They're signing everyone. They're trying to sign Belotti as well, ahead of Chelsea.
It's unusual. The only thing is really amazing, though. I mean, you know, just a few months ago, we were talking about what a mess the club was in because of everything gone on with Berlusconi and the fact that the sale was actually a bit of a mess as well. A lot of people were unhappy about selling to a Chinese investor in the first place, and a lot of people in Italy were mocking it. And it looks as if there are actually quite a few people within the club sort of waiting for this to happen so they could get back to the place they wanted to be. I think they see it as the place, and, you know, maybe rightly so within Italian football, that they're supposed to be. You know, there were those pictures of Bonucci when he went to AC Milan, shaking the hands of a number of people, but then also going into their trophy room and seeing all the Champions League trophies. So I don't know, there's something quite Italian, there's like an Italian class about this transfer in a way. And it's quite entertaining so far. Mm. But then AC Milan, incredible from Milan, really.
Let's move on then. Let's talk about James Rodriguez, I should say. What is it? The name's Bond. James Rodriguez, I believe.
Is his name. I can't believe you called him James.
Sorry. I'm just that headline, mate. Is that Bloody headline wait, stuck in my head?
Monday morning.
Big James he's joined Bayern Munich, Dave. Ooh. On a 2-year loan deal. How do you think Big James is going to get on?
Big Jimmy, as he's known to his pals.
Yeah.
In the Colombian squad, obviously, Cuadrado calls him Big Jimmy.
Naturally.
Big Jim. I think it'll be perfect. I think it's this Munich team's quite an interesting phase. You're thinking Ribery, Robin, last stage of their career, still doing a very, very good job. They were excellent this season in the Bundesliga, both of them fantastic, supplying Lewandowski with goal after goal after goal. The thing that was good for me in the Champions League was Thiago floating as a number 10 that had the likes of Alonso and Vidal behind him. I thought that was a really good situation. I thought if they had beaten one of the big boys and then they faced Milan in the final, they would have had a far better chance. I think they played Real Madrid a little bit too early. Sorry, not Milan, obviously Real Madrid. They played Real Madrid a little bit too early in the competition. They got dumped out. But I liked how Thiago was used as a floating playmaker to create, to do whatever. Obviously, where James, you know, plays is attacking midfield. Yeah, he can play wide. Yeah, he can play deeper. But you get the best James if you allow him to float, you allow him to counter-attack. And of course, Carlo Ancelotti, that's kind of how he's built his team and how he has done well in the last stage of the Champions League, is playing on the break. Of course, Rodriguez is one of the best counter-attackers. You know, he's sort of your Kevin De Bruyne type attacking midfield, but likes drifting wide and crossing loads. Very explosive, you know, in sort of shooting position as well. We all know that. That won the goal he scored at the World Cup. But I think it's a very, very solid acquisition. And an acquisition to maybe push Thiago a little bit deeper next to Vidal and then move this team on. Again, Ancelotti needed to move the team on away from Guardiola. Guardiola's possession was a little bit stagnant towards the back end. Yes, they scored a hatful of goals, but wasn't the most exciting style. And if Ancelotti can do that, you know, can sort of unlock that on the break, unlock the play, that would be very, very nice. Of course, they've lost Douglas Costa, which is a bit of a strange one. Of course, Costa maybe falling out with the hierarchy and Ancelotti. But James coming in will be absolutely perfect. Expect goals, assists. You know, he had one of the best records. I think it was over 10 goals and assists being directly involved. He had the best minutes record in La Liga for any midfielder last season. So even though he didn't play much, he made contribution. So over in for Bayern, it'll be brilliant. And again, it opens up Bayern for you know, the Colombian market, the South American market. Mm. So again, Bayern Munich making a very good transfer. I think this was a good transfer. They didn't get ripped off like an English club would get ripped off. They made a solid acquisition, a loan with Moom to buy, which is going to cost them what? I think it was 30 million odd, 40 million odd for the you know, the add-on, when the transfer fee and the paying per season, which makes sense. I don't feel that English club would have done that.
Do you think, though, Lawrence, that maybe Bayern Munich need to do more? Of course, we've seen Philipp Lahm and Xabi Alonso enjoying their retirement now this summer. Arturo Vidal,
happy
and Robin.
For them both.
Yeah, of course. And, you know, Frank Ribery, as I was saying, Vidal and Robin are all in their 30s now. They've brought in Rodriguez, as Dave says, a good, solid signing. They also signed Corentin Tolisso earlier this summer, becoming the most expensive player in Bundesliga's history. But despite mm-hmm. those signings, as Dave's saying, losing Douglas Costa as well, they need to do more to rejuvenate this squad. I mean, we were talking last season after they got knocked out of the Champions League. Maybe they need to do more to move on.
Well, yeah, I mean, they certainly do need to move the squad forward. But then I think one thing they really lacked last season was a player like James Rodriguez. Because I think that they did look a bit part at times. There was a bit of disjunction between different areas in the midfield, considering that they had a lot of players out. And most of the analysis after this is that Thiago couldn't carry the team in that area on his own. He needed some help. So James Rodriguez makes sense. And I think Carlo Ancelotti is the kind of manager who can cope on with a squad of this size. I mean, it's not like he's playing with a number of people who are sort of lower quality within the team. He's got pretty much a full 25 of quality players and a load of people coming through the Bayern Academy. So if any manager can do it with this team, I'd say it was Carlo Ancelotti.
Let's move on then to the man you mentioned earlier, Dave, the most expensive defender of all time now, unbelievably. Mm-hmm. Kyle Walker joined Manchester City on Friday for £50 million plus £3 million in add-ons, taking him past the 50
million. That sounds
million.
So ridiculous, by the way. £50 million plus £3 million in add-ons.
Hey, this is just what the Guardian's reporting.
It's add-ons, Lawrence, you know, add-ons. That's £20 million easy, right?
I'm sure Daniel Levy ensured those add-ons were in place so that he could say, Kyle Walker, the most expensive defender of all time. You know, we just sold him to Man City for that much. You know, just that little extra something.
Absolutely didn't, mate.
What do you make of this, Lawrence? Because, I mean, Kyle Walker, obviously a fantastic player, an England international. Having said that, only 27 caps for England, I believe. Someone who essentially was displaced by Kieran Trippier in the Tottenham team last season at right back. And as I said, yet is the most expensive defender of all time.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly was seen as desirable. Most people said he was the best right back in the Premier League last season, even though he played less towards the end, so you know he didn't really get that full season that he wanted. The reason he was displaced was because he disagreed with Pochettino, and Pochettino, I don't think out of ego, but having done a documentary on him last season, we sort of worked out that he had sort of a quiet machismo to him, which he imparted on the players. And if anyone questioned some of his methods, then most of the time they ended up out of the team. And, you know, that could be something as what from the outside might look as trivial as questioning his training methods or questioning his rehabilitation of players or questioning recovery times. And apparently that was something Kyle Walker wasn't particularly happy with in the playing twice a week scenario, considering also how hard he pushes the players. Maybe a player might be right to question something like that. But, you know, it's really up to them. Ultimately, there is the phrase that most people go back to when we speak about Pochettino, which is you sign a contract to train with the team, not to play. And it sounds a lot like Kyle Walker didn't forget that. But I don't think he was happy to be part of that sort of system anymore. And I think he wanted to go to a place like Man City, which is a very different culture to Spurs and a very different approach to Spurs. And I think it shows maybe what Kyle Walker's aiming for, which isn't necessarily just for the cash, even though that is part of it. But I think it's also that he does see there's a project being built at Man City, which is obviously quite exciting. There's a lot of young players there who are quite exciting young players. And I imagine when you go and speak to the England squad, you know, you speak to Sterling and players who are quite excited about having really international superstars there and talking about the lifestyle that they have and the marketability. There's something quite appealing about that. And maybe Kyle Walker didn't have the time to wait for that at Spurs as well. So overall, I think it makes sense. Now, I don't actually think that Spurs have lost out all that much. I don't think Pochettino is going to feel like he's... Well, I certainly don't think Pochettino is going to treat it like a loss. Should we put it that way? Maybe, therefore, Spurs shouldn't treat it like a loss.
I think it's a very good deal for Spurs. But is it a good deal for Manchester City, Dave? They obviously needed to sign a right-back. They still need a left-back as well.
Mate, they got Dani Alves.
Yeah, of course, yeah. You know, sacre bleu indeed. Is Kyle Walker worthwhile signing up right back? I mean, it's hard to agree that he's worth 50 million, but is he a good signing for Man City?
Yeah, he's an absolutely brilliant sign. I think we've been... It seems weird how... This is probably the first time where I've kind of seen a bit of an anti-Man City rhetoric in the media where... They've bought a defender that is the best right back in the Premier League and has been for the last few seasons. Yes, he's 50 million, but in a way we should negate what transfer fees are these days. And he didn't stop playing at the end of the season. He played 33 games for Spurs this season. Yeah, he missed the last two games. But before that, he was still playing. And it's one of these things where it's been built now where Kyle Walker is the bad guy. He's the villain. And, you know, he hasn't been as good, but he's been brilliant this year. I think the thing with City, I was watching City-Everton doing some research for the Lukaku transfer, and City just were absolutely rotten at fullback. So they're playing like a narrow diamond against Everton that day. Everton set up in a 3-5-2. So if you play a narrow diamond, your fullbacks need to attack. The amount of time that Gael Clichy and Sagna on the other side just froze in the final third, narrowed City's attack, completely killed the move, was ridiculous. Like, Gael Clichy was just afraid, absolutely afraid of getting ahead of, you know, the central midfielders and getting that width in the final third. It was crazy. What Kyle Walker will do is be able to get up and down, defend, attack. You know, what he added to his game this season was his ability on the ball, like to chop inside, to hit the byline by beating a player if he needed to. He's got the pace, got the ability. He's a brilliant signing. You know, one of the signings that City needed. City needed fullbacks. It was weird that Guardiola went to the club and they had no fullbacks in a way. You know, they had an aging Sagna, aging Clichy, aging Zabaleta, Kolarov that's so hot and cold. And by signing someone like Kyle Walker that has consistently been one of the best fullbacks in the league for the last few seasons is a great signing. Whether it's 50 million, whether it is, you know, a bit ridiculous, you know, we can't be dictated by the market in terms of our feelings of how the player will impact the club, which will be in a very, very positive way. I think we also got to look at, in terms of fees, you know, someone like Morata, Madrid wanting more than 75 million for that is absolutely incredible. For a player that scored over 10 league goals once in his career, it's incredible that they can demand that. But Walker isn't that. Walker is a finished article at 27 years old, is in the prime of his career. Is a little bit Dani Alves alike, you know, how he played for Spurs. You know, if you can do that for Guardiola at City, that'll be excellent for their right-hand side that was arguably a bit poor this season. And again, it's one of the problems. He needs to get a left-back, he needs to get a right-back. And City are at a really good point. The other side of it as well, I was looking through the most expensive defenders list. What jumps out to me is that what Premier League clubs potentially are doing wrong is instead of going for a younger player, and developing it, you know, say like a lad that's 18 maybe and taking that development process or 19 and taking the development process, one of these really good managers, they're going in and they're spending, you know, 47 million on John Stones, who was about 23 then. You know, you're thinking David Luiz, who it was 28 maybe when they signed him. So maybe Premier League clubs need to have a look at themselves and go back to the other way and be like, okay, right, let's sign a player young. Let's sign a defender young and let's work them through. Let's work them through a method. Let's coach them through these problems. Instead of going, right, let's just throw loads of money at this dude. And it kind of like shows that Thiago Silva was signed for 33 million. Thiago Silva, if he was signed right now in the market, would be the Bonucci value. And it's just weird that maybe clubs need to take a different approach. But obviously, we'll probably talk about that later with Chelsea.
Yes, I was about to say, yes, we will indeed. Benjamin Mendy is apparently the left-back that Guardiola has identified to fill that void. Another $50 million potentially to spend there on a left-back. City have also signed midfielder Douglas Luiz from Vasco da Gama for £10 million, so their business is continuing on this summer. On the other hand, though, Lawrence, Spurs, having sold Kyle Walker, they've actually yet to sign a single player themselves this season. Do you think that should be a worry for Spurs fans? I mean, is this someone more about keeping the squad together, which is something we've heard time and time again? Is there, you know, the wage ceiling that exists at the club of 100 grand? Is that something that makes signing new players difficult? Is there reason to panic for Spurs?
No, you've still got quite a long time to left to go in the transfer window. You've still got about a month and a half. Almost exactly a month and a half. So there's still ages. I'm not quite sure why everyone gets so worried about this sort of thing. It's not like anyone that has been linked with the club has gone anywhere else, really.
It's just with every other club around seemingly strengthening so much, you know, with how tight the race was last season for the top four. You see Manchester United spending all these incredible sums.
But they were ahead of that race. So, I mean, you know, I know you're basically saying they're static whilst everyone else is moving forward. They were quite a long way ahead of that race. They were the only team that kept it competitive. I can also see your flip side, though, and the frustration maybe that, you know, without anyone coming in, it does feel a little bit like standing still. And there was that sort of, we flagged this worry a little while ago, that if Pochettino didn't really, you know, realistically challenge this season, then maybe it would feel as if the project had stagnated a little bit. And, you know, you begin to lose those players. That's partly the problem with the Kyle Walker transfer, is that the fact he went to Man City, and maybe it is good that, you know, Spurs have got their people in the press that they can sort of push out, you know, well, he fell out, he was causing problems in the dressing room or whatever. I'm not saying he's disruptive, but I'm saying, you know, it's not necessarily great to have a player there that's not happy. Basically what it diverts away from is that the player has gone to someone else who has a very different project and has a lot more budget. And maybe while Spurs are waiting for their new stadium, etc., there is going to be this period which feels stagnant and maybe requires a bit of patience from the Spurs fans. But I'd imagine quite a few of them would actually be okay with that as long as they remain in the top four.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not necessarily worried myself. I'm not necessarily panicking. I think Spurs' starting 11 was so good last season. The squad that Pochettino has put together is so strong that I think for Spurs it's difficult to identify players who are necessarily going to improve that and yet fit into those sort of criteria that is needed for Spurs to sign them, be it, you know, an affordable signing, be it someone who's going to be under 100 grand a week in wages, someone who's not going to break that structure. I mean, Dave,
is it also worth saying, Adam, that actually Pochettino's done well to bring quite a few of the youth through from the academy? I know most people are saying, like, you know, Tim Shearer bought some of those guys through, and that's true, but I really think he's brought them on to another level that maybe other managers wouldn't have taken them to, as a collective as well as individuals. And to add on to that as well, maybe if you don't make signings, and speaking to the point that Dave just made, actually they've got a manager that their academy guys say is a dream to work with. So maybe if you're not making signings, you're bringing people through.
Certainly, I think that was something we didn't necessarily see last season as much as previous seasons, Pochettino, but Josh Onnemar is someone who was part of the squad last season, who I think a lot of Spurs fans are hoping will be more involved next season. And Marcus Edwards as well, who's someone who has a lot of attention, a lot of heat around him, you know, potentially could be a name who, if we don't make those signings, does get involved next year. I just feel like maybe if there's one or two additions we can make to strengthen that squad, if we are going to make a real push, a real challenge in the Champions League and improve on what was a pretty disastrous campaign in Europe last season, if we are going to maintain our level with everyone else around us improving, I think I would like to see one or two signings. But again, it's difficult when the criteria for Spurs is so narrow. One player, Spurs will be open.
I think that's such a Premier League thing to say, though, the criteria is so narrow. You can pay a lad 100 grand a week and he'll join a very progressive Premier League side with one of the best managers in the league. In terms of a coaching way, surely, I mean, that's something that you could sell to a young player and be like, look, yes, you could go to Chelsea, yes, you could go to Manchester United, but here, you get game time, you'll learn, You're not going to be a Mo Salah. You're not going to be, you know, I think that's the thing now. There's a lot of examples where players have gone for a Chelsea, gone for a Manchester United that should have gone to Spurs. You know, Morgan Schneiderlin could have been another good example. Not at United level at all. Not good enough, but would have been good at Spurs because he could have played a functional role and would have worked. And I think that's a thing that Spurs need to position themselves as these guys that you come to Spurs, like a Dele Alli, you've got potential, you've got heaps of potential. You come to our club and we'll make you, you know, we'll turn you around. I agree with the academy stuff. That's the good thing Pochettino's doing. But if you think about the signings last season, Spurs signed, what, four players? One of them's been a massive success. The others have not at all. I think in Victor Wanyama's been the big success. Nkudu's been absolutely rubbish. Janssen's been rubbish. And Sissoko's been rubbish. Apart from Sissoko, did score a goal in the League Cup final against me on Football Manager, which upset me greatly. Yeah, but apart from that, he's been very poor. And I think that Spurs need to reevaluate themselves in the market. They are acting too late, thinking the Sissoko transfer's far too late. I agree that not signing players now isn't a worry, but the big thing you've got to think about is you need to have your business done early so these players can come into the squad and they can work with their teammates. You know, if you sign someone at the end of the window, it takes you another 2 months to, you know, get into the squad. Then we're in whatever month we're in there. We're in September, let's say.
That is the Daniel Levy approach, though. He likes to start his business up.
That is a problem.
100%.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm not disagreeing with that at all. But I think it is still, I think it's a difficult market for Spurs to compete. And I agree with what you're saying about the attraction of the club and maybe how they can position themselves. But I mean, look at the Eric Dier situation. We're talking about reports that Manchester United want to sign him for 50-odd million. They want to more than double his wages, something Spurs could never afford to do. The players apparently tempted by the move. It's a difficult balancing act for the club and for Daniel Levy when you've got other clubs out there in a different reality.
You've got to know where you are. You've really got to look at the latest examples of European football, the Borussia Dortmunds that got dismantled. You need to be able to think about the next level. Almost Spurs need to act 5 years down the line. Need to think, okay, 5 years down the line when Dele Alli gets to 25 and he's like killing it, he's scoring even more goals than he's scoring right now. Who have we got coming through next? And unfortunately, it's not a bad position to be in because Spurs are a club that are growing. Spurs have got a new stadium. They've got a fantastic youth academy and so forth. But they need to have that thought down the line because if they keep, you know, throwing money at brick walls with your Janssens, with your Sissokos, your Vinicius, you know, you're going to get stuck. You know, there is good ones. You're looking at Son last season, 14 league goals, absolutely destroyed it in 2017, was brilliant. Again, he's going to be the starting guy now. But it needs more like that, more that you can work in eventually that will work, not some guy that you're thinking, I've just spent 30 million on pretty much a player that can run fast.
Yeah, arguably, they didn't sign those players just for that reason, though, did they? You know, they didn't, you know, and also if you're dealing in that market, then there are going to be hit and miss players. I think there have been a couple of managers that have fallen foul of dealing in that sub sort of highly rated players market, and then they've been bitten or they've been caught out, and that's maybe part of the trapping of where they are. But I mean, the fact that they've still continued to challenge two seasons in a row, arguably they haven't won maybe two seasons where they could have, they're actually doing something right. And so, you know, if the end result is still what they wanted, then, you know, it pretty much balances itself out.
I think long term, if you look at the signings over the last three seasons,
yeah, but look who they've brought through the squad.
I'd say about five players have been good, and they've spent a lot of money. And I understand that it's a difficult market to work in, but then have an approach, a philosophy of who's really worked. Dele Alli's worked. Eric Dier's worked. Signed at 18. Signed at 20. you know, their name for that. Because the guys,
yeah, they could have gone the other way.
They could be playing in but they haven't. That's the thing. They're the successes. The likes of Fazio signed at 27. The likes of Stambouli signed at 24. And then
it's not their age arguably with Pochettino.
That should be a factor for Spurs, because Spurs have to go down that line of developing young players into the market and bamboozle people with cash. They've got to go for this approach.
Well, you'll be glad to know, Dave, that Spurs have been linked with an actual signing this week. An £8 million signing from Estudiantes defender Juan Foyth, who's 19 years old. You know?
Yeah, like that.
Seen in the mould of Toby Alderweireld. It could be a decent signing.
Have either of you seen him play for Estudiantes?
Great signing.
I haven't, but I'm just saying, you know, he's in that mould that Dave was talking about. A player who's more affordable, a young player who can develop under Pochettino. It's interesting that, as he's saying that's the one player Spurs have actually been linked with.
But what if you buy three players? So you spend $8 million with the Estudiantes, you spend $8 million on someone, I spend $8 million on someone else. Arguably,
that's already $12 million less than you spent on Moussa Sissoko.
How much did they spend on Moussa Sissoko?
$30 million.
He is the
that's $6 million.
He's the most expensive signing. Most expensive signing in Spurs history.
But my point is, if you sign three of those players, then maybe three of those players can slip under the radar because, you know, well, he was $8 million. Fine, but we'll move him on. We've still got another one. Okay, well, that other one hasn't quite worked out, but he was only $8 million. We'll move him on.
Then the resale value of those players is going to be more than $8 million if you coach them the right way.
If you coach them the right way, then you're arguably going to keep them. You know,
you've got three signings that are. That's what I'm not building this hot and cold with signing young players. It's that you're signing a young player with potential, right? It's sort of like your Manchester United Youth Academy model where, you know, 90% of players that come through United Academy won't play for Manchester United, but United will sell them or United will let them go and then these players will be in the Premier League. So it's a similar thing that Spurs could do if they can develop players of 19 years old to 18 to 19 year olds, develop them through this academy and then potentially sell them. You know, if they don't work at Spurs, they'll go and work in the Championship. They might work in the bottom end of the Premier League. I don't know. It's new thinking, let's say. It's different thinking to how the Premier League is.
But surely it has to be thinking that matches with Pochettino. And we can't, I mean, really, we're going to have to look. You have to cut off the Pochettino era from everything else. You have to cut off the fact they sold Gareth Bale. You have to cut off all those other things. Because that massively inflates the amount of spending that they did under a very different regime or idea of that. Because they didn't feel, or the managers maybe put the pressure on that, well, we have to spend money because we've just sold our biggest player. And so Daniel Levy sort of cowed to that at one time. In the two seasons that they've had Pochettino, they've finished, second twice? In those three seasons, they finished second twice?
Third and second.
It's third and second. Arguably, they finished second twice because Arsenal don't count. But the point is that with that, those are still two great league finishes.
But it's the continuation of that is the problem, and they need a plan to continue that. And if they just lose Dele Alli, they lose Harry Kane, and they lose a Kyle Walker every season, that dies. Like Monaco. Monaco can't continually lose Bakayoko, Fabinho, Bernardo Silva every season and expect to be as competitive as they are.
But they can if they believe that Trippier is going to be a player who can replace Kyle Walker.
But like Kyle Walker and Trippier are in different leagues, absolutely different leagues. Kyle Walker is a very, very good, very, very good fullback wingback. Trippier is good, but he's nowhere near the levels of Kyle Walker.
But the point is that it's not necessarily about those levels. It's about having a manager who can get the best out of those players.
But at the same time, then if you've got someone like Kieran Trippier that what's 27 now, he's not going to get to the level of Kyle Walker. Because they're a similar age.
Yeah.
26, but they're a similar age where if what they should buy to replace Kyle Walker is an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old or a 20-year-old.
But he's not going to be the level of Kyle Walker then.
But then you've got Kieran Trippier to be that stopgap. And then eventually you'll have this guy that will come through. And that's the what I'm talking about, like the progress of positions. That's what Spurs need to take into consideration is what is going on.
Well,
maybe their signings, but yeah, I think a lot of their signings are going to come through the academy.
We'll see.
It should be good.
It remains to be seen. Like you say, Lawrence, plenty of time left in the window. We'll see what happens Spurs over the summer. Let's talk about Manchester United, Dave. I mentioned Eric Dier there, somebody who continues to be linked to a move with the club. Seemingly dividing opinion. Manchester United fans don't seem to be completely sold on the idea of him. Rajani Golan, a potential alternative. He's been linked with Manchester United in the British press this week. I mean, who would you like to see join the club out of those two?
Fabinho. Perfect. I think the problem with some United fans on social media is they don't because they've not watched a stupid amount of Spurs, or they don't understand what Eric Dier does in that system, they don't really rate him. Because he's your water carrier, but he plays a very pivotal role in terms of getting the ball and playing it forward. But arguably at the end of the season, was better than Victor Wanyama, had the place of Moussa Dembélé. Moussa Dembélé is regarded as one of the most underrated in the players in the Premier League, which now he's overrated. Of course, Lawrence loves this underrated, overrated type jargon. But in terms of Eric Dier, fantastic end to the campaign, but he's been brilliant for like 2 years. Really good on the ball, calm, composed, intercepts at the right time, makes the right move, tactically is balanced. If one of his teammates go forward, he's going to hold his position. And a player that can understand the game of football, something that we don't have in many English players, and you know, Eric Dier has that, arguably more Portuguese than English, having spent a lot of his youth career playing for Sporting Lisbon after being at Everton. But again, it's one of these players that he'd be a good signing. Like, United need to remember that the market's so broken. You know, you didn't get Belotti because he was a stupid amount of money for a player that's had two good years. Then you're moving on to Morata, one good year, or, you know, plus that one good goal scoring year, should I say. Like, signing Lukaku made sense because he scored in the Premier League. And if you're going to spend 75 million on a player, you might as well get a player that's scored in your own league and done it very, very well over the last, you know, four or five seasons. He's been directly involved in 112 goals in his Premier League career, where a goal every 112 minutes he's been directly involved in. So he's got a very good record in the Premier League. So spend that money there. So why not sign someone like Eric Dier, who's done it in terms of his forward passes and interceptions? He's really high regarded in that those aspects. So it's one of these things where he'd be a good signing. Nainggolan wouldn't be a good signing. You watch Nainggolan this season, he's played in pretty much either a 3-4-1-2 or a 3-4-2-1 as behind either two strikers or behind one striker. You look at his best performances into Milan. I think it was at the San Siro. He had a cracking game, scored two wonderful goals. All of those goals that he scored were from an attacking midfield position. Man United don't need an attacking midfielder. United need a defensive midfielder. We've got thousands of attacking midfielders. So it's one of these things where Nainggolan wouldn't work, Eric Dier would work. So Eric Dier would be the better signing out of the two, but arguably, what's the point in that when you can sign Fabinho?
What about Ivan Perisic? Because this saga's rumbling on, but the signing is said to be very close, according to independent chief football writer Miguel Delaney. Is that a good signing as well to complement the arrival of Lukaku then?
So what I don't understand about the Perisic deal is, if United were to play a 4-3-3 or a 4-2-3-1, yeah, Perisic would be fantastic. You know, he's a winger, goes wide, crosses the ball, takes people on, very, very skillful, had his best season ever in terms of goals and assists, looked like he's maturing. You know, some fantastic performances last game of the season. I watched it against Udinese, I do believe. Absolutely brilliant. Two goals and an assist. It was just fantastic. Like a real, real sort of hungry performance, very electric. What United want in a winger. Not a inside forward that's going to come inside, but a winger that's going to stay wide and take people on and get crossed into the box. Of course, in open play, sometimes he does drift centrally and become a second striker, but he's naturally either as a number 10 goal scoring or he's going to be out wide. He's not going to be in that inside left channel that we have a lot of players that play that sort of position. You think Martial, Rashford, the list goes on and on and on. What doesn't make sense is that United played a 3-5-2 against LA Galaxy. And it looks like Mourinho's going for a 3-5-2. A 3-5-2 kind of works for the United squad. You're thinking they've got quite a lot of centre-halves that are decent, wing-back-wise. And that's where potentially Perisic would come in at wing-back. But, you know, you look at the best wing-backs in world football, they're not wingers that became defenders. They're defenders that became wing-backs. Because you've got to know your defensive ability first. You've got to know where you've got to stand in a defensive sense. I think it could work against a smaller team if United were, you know, massively dominating the ball and you can throw both wing-backs forward. They're not wing-backs anymore. They're arguably wingers and you're playing pretty much a 3-3-4. But that's the problem with the Perisic signing. It doesn't make sense that United have now switched formation. You know, someone like Paul Pogba, you know, so good in a 3-5-2 at Juve, so good at being able to have that freedom on the left wing, almost being the left winger as well as a left central midfielder, just drifting around. Mkhitaryan had a great second half, very explosive from central midfield. If you're playing a 3-5-2 in this modern day, for me, you've arguably got to play attacking midfielders in those two central midfield spots and let them go. You're thinking Hoffenheim are a great example. Demir Bay and Amiri, absolutely fantastic at carrying the ball, receiving the ball in between the lines. Problem with United is they need to work on that a bit more. They need to push the likes of Ander Herrera a bit further forward up the pitch or whoever's playing central midfield. Pogba, Mkhitaryan works as a central pairing. The problem with Perisic is arguably where he'd suit that system as a striker. But United have already got Mata, who played as a striker in the first half against LA Galaxy. Marcus Rashford, who's come back and he looks like an absolute tank. Scored two very, very good goals.
You've got obviously Lukaku signed for 75 million and Martial, who got a goal and assist in the second half against LA Galaxy. You've already got four strikers to play those two positions. So it's just a weird one. Whether Perisic will work as a left wing back, maybe. But I just don't. The signing doesn't make sense now if Mourinho is going to go for a 3-5-2 and fully commit to a 3-5-2.
Remains to be seen how that unfolds then. Perisic supposed to be joining this week, according to reports. Another one which might be seen as a strange move, Lawrence, is the signing of Tiemoue Bakayoko from Monaco to Chelsea.
Why do you think that's a strange move?
Well, we're about to come on to what Dave was alluding to earlier about the development of youth products at Premier League teams.
But Chelsea are signing him, mate. What was the last, you know?
Well, it's just, you know, the contrast is drawn by Nathaniel Chalobah joining Watford for £6 million, player of the same age and the same position as Bakayoko, but a few days before the Frenchman joined the club for, what, £40-odd million. Do you find it a bit disheartening almost to see a player that had been trained up by Chelsea, who'd been hyped as one of their biggest and most successful sort of youth products, to then move on himself, to not be trusted by Chelsea, who then spend £40 million on a player, as I say, at the same age and same position coming into the club?
I mean, I think maybe it's part of what Dave's saying. You know, I think the culture at Chelsea probably isn't one which is going to be helping a young player like that. I think it's probably geared more towards signing someone like Bakayoko, who's an excellent player. And also sort of comes from the mould of... apparently he's been moulded by Claude Makélélé. So, I mean, really, it's Chelsea going back to what they know and love in that sense. So, great signing on their part, I think, mainly because I'm excited to see Conte do something with most players that they sign for the team. I think a lot of players that come are underrated when they come to Chelsea. I think Bakayoko probably is one of those players that... I mean, he would have got the plaudits last season, but there are a lot of other players who were in an attacking sense got a lot more plaudits in the English press than Bakayoko did. I know Dave highlighted a couple of other people did, but I don't think he was so highlighted in the mainstream press. So I look forward to seeing how he plays in the Premier League. He looks great in the Chelsea shirt as well. So let's see what happens. I'm excited for it. I don't think it's a bad move at all. I also think it's Chelsea. You just discount the rest. If it's Chelsea, it doesn't matter like that they haven't signed someone young, or they haven't brought someone through from the academy. It's Chelsea.
Can we just discount that, Dave? Should we not be scrutinising this business?
I mean, we need to scrutinise them, but the fact is, we don't. What information are you going to use to scrutinise Chelsea? I mean, apart from everything else that's already been said, the fact is they don't. They do have a number of good youth products. They do take from other teams. They do have a lot of people out on loan. They haven't seemed to have changed that more recently. And it's very confusing as to why they haven't. And you wonder if most of it is down to the commercial side of Chelsea and the fact that they don't feel like they've got that many commercially viable players in the Chelsea team. Not least the fact that Diego Costa is off partying halfway around the world in a bloody Atletico Madrid.
At least it's
on brand. It's Nike.
You know what it is good for, Adam? It's good for Spurs, because Spurs can now go sitting down to sign this 13-year-old who lives in West London, let's say. Let's call him Steve. Steve Gibson, let's call him. Steve Gibson's now going to go to Chelsea and he's going to go to Spurs. The entry into the Chelsea team for Steve Gibson is going to be pretty much impossible. The entry into the Spurs team is very open. So again, it's one of these things where, yes, Chelsea are getting all the top youth players right now. London is very, very competitive. And they'll start to, you know, drop out in terms of these negotiations with players, because Arsenal, Spurs, you know, even West Ham may be more attractive, because they're going to see a route into the first team. Maybe not West Ham, obviously. They lost. Who did they lose? The 16-year-old lad that played against Arsenal first game of last season, who they've blown to
Bristol. Oxford.
Reece Oxford, again, why the hell that he's not even considered to be part of their squad is mental. Gladbach have got a great record of bringing through young defenders. But why can't West Ham have the same thing? But anyway, back to the point of Chalobah versus Bakayoko. You know, Bakayoko and Kante, is that going to work? No. They're the same type of player. They're the same player that isn't going to hold position. One of them will have to change their game. It could be Bakayoko. Did it quite well for the French under-19s, maybe? I don't know why I was watching in the 19s French team for some stupid time. I don't know what I was doing. As you do. I was watching that Kevin Augusto, I think he's...
fantastic, and he was absolutely bonza. Again, a PSG Academy prospect that's getting no game time at PSG, gone to Leipzig, and will probably have a really good time over there. But it's a similar thing. Bakayoko will have to adopt his game and have to sit deeper, because he can't have two players harrying, because then the space in front of the back three opens up. Or Chelsea go to a 3-5-2, but we haven't really seen that, because they haven't signed any other... You know, they haven't signed a deep-line playmaker. Maybe it could be Cesc Fabregas, but still, Conte didn't do that this season, so I can't see him doing it next season. So Chelsea are at a real crossroads right now, and losing the likes of Costa, as Lawrence mentioned, they may struggle next season. They may really struggle. They've lost their goals. They've not evolved the side. People have worked out how to deal with Eden Hazard. Yeah, he had a fantastic season, was brilliant. But at the back end of the season, people started to go, right, this is how we deal with Hazard, because there's no other facets to this Chelsea team. And that's the problem that Conte is going to have to address early doors. Because teams will sit deeper against them. They'll man-mark Eden Hazard. And that kind of negates their only weapon going forward, without Costa's ability to bring long passes down. So whether it is Morata, whether it is Belotti, they need to get a move on.
Run out of time, so let's wrap up the last few transfer bits and bobs. First up, Lucas Leiva, Lawrence, has left Liverpool for Lazio. Tears for Lucas. Sad.
He was there for a very long time. Maybe people will be upset that he went to Lazio. I think he wanted out of the club. I think he wanted another challenge. Lazio is probably about the level that Lucas can play at now. And he was a great servant for the club. I think what people say that and what they mean by that is, it wasn't only that he sort of played, it was also that he played in a number of different positions, often out of position, often sacrificing the good that he had for the good of the team. Maybe playing at centre-back when he is clearly not a centre-back, but clearly is an intelligent enough player, but maybe not physically sort of developed enough to play in a position like centre-back. But he did it for Liverpool and actually covered reasonably well. When I say reasonably well, I mean they probably had one of the worst centre-back pairings that Liverpool could have had out there, and Lucas was probably the best option. Bear in mind also, when he came to England, he was an attacking midfielder that Benitez morphed into a defensive midfielder, who wanted to play slightly deeper and wanted to play alongside someone like Alonso or like Mascherano. So he often found himself in the midfield having to play the Mascherano role. Very rarely did he have to find himself playing the Alonso role, and because Steven Gerrard was just ahead of them, most people had sacrificed part of their game so that Gerrard could maraud in the way that he did. So I actually think Liverpool hampered his development. It probably would have been more satisfying to see him go somewhere else and be a great attacking midfielder, maybe even somewhere else in Serie A, because at this point, looking back, you'd say it might have suited his career. But I think a lot of Liverpool fans are very grateful that he came to Liverpool because he was a great character. There's a lot of memes around the club, unlucky and those sort of things, which I think a lot of Liverpool fans will thank him for and be very happy about. A lot of people will remember him affectionately, maybe off and on the pitch, even if it's not because he won something incredible with the team.
Mainly for that meme, yeah.
I think there's other things with Lucas. I think you say Liverpool far too long. I think Liverpool should have moved their side on a while ago. I think Lucas has hampered your development personally. Also, in terms of,
I don't think he's gone out of his way, Tam. I think I don't think it's Lucas's responsibility to say, boss, I think I need to move on here. I'm hampering other people's development. I think he was very often used, like I say, as a stopgap or a player who covered for other players when Liverpool didn't feel like they had someone who could play there.
I think one of the things that you got to look at with Lucas as well, someone that I used to work with got a direct message from Lucas after writing an article about him and didn't really come across very nice, to say the least. So one of these things.
What was the article about, Dave?
It was about poor performance from Liverpool, and Lucas took it very personally. And quite frankly, that's not something you should be doing as a professional footballer, is going around attacking journalists. But that was allegedly, obviously we need to back ourselves up in some sort of legal perspective, but apparently not a very nice guy.
You know what? I've heard Lucas is nothing but a nice guy. So I'm going to counter that. I think there is probably a lot of frustration, and from what I've just listed, I would say probably legitimate frustration from a player like Lucas, because very often he is played out of position. I think he came here expecting something different. And I think he's found a culture that he really liked, but not necessarily a footballing culture that really took him on. And I think a lot of people from outside Liverpool were quite critical of him. I do think players also have a right to respond. If you can't say what he said, then really, first of all, he's not here maybe to respond in that way. But second of all, what did he say? Because I've heard nothing but good things about Lucas, the fact that he was charitable, the fact that he was a guy who was really good to other people at the club, the fact that he was a great guy to have around the dressing room, all these sorts of things.
You just shouldn't be going out attacking fans, full stop.
And whatever. So did he attack a fan?
Did
he attack a fan or did he attack a journalist?
Attacked a fan and journalist, Lawrence, which could be even worse.
Cool.
I mean, you're going to have to act as one or the other, or either that or you're writing on a fan site.
Let's move on to the final bit of news.
Lawrence,
wrap up, guys.
Lucas is a terrible guy.
I'm going to defend him in this instance. I think it's difficult to say without backing it up with actual evidence that someone's not a great guy.
Let's talk about someone who may or may also not be a great guy. Joe Hart, depending on your point.
Oh, he is a wanker. He's a real.
Yeah, he could be on his way to West Ham, guys.
That's where he is.
On loan. The top geezer himself, Joe Hart. You're going to be delighted to see him back in the Premier League, Dave?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I think someone did a stat yesterday that was like, out of goalkeepers that have played over 15 games in Serie A, he had the worst save percentage. So pretty much did a Claudio Bravo over in Serie A. But it'll be fun to see Joe back playing for West Ham. Hopefully he can get his confidence back and start making saves instead of letting them go through his hands.
Lovely stuff. I think that's the perfect place to end the podcast, unless, briefly, there's anything else anyone else would like to mention before we wrap up. Lawrence, anything you want to mention?
I did find it really weird that all the banter accounts online are having a lot of banter about the fact that Lukaku didn't score in his first game for Manchester United. I just find that really, really weird. Not everyone scores on their debut. Do you know, like you're not, and also not everyone scores on their debut. It's just that simple.
Even if you didn't, who cares, etc.
I don't know. I just think Twitter accounts, like the problem is people who originally set up Twitter accounts back in the day were like people who sort of, they probably had like quite good banter, for the word that I hate to use. They probably were quite funny guys. And since then, these have obviously become an industry and a business. And now there's a lot of people entering into the business with bad banter. They'll say whatever they think to just get clicks. Do you know what I mean? Like they'll, here's a statistic. Here's something out of context. Here's this, here's that. Maybe this guy should keep his mouth shut, or maybe he should concentrate on being out on the pitch. He won't be unhappy tonight because he'll go home to his wife. And you're just like, well, mate, just leave it. Like, I wish there was a way you could just get rid of some of these shit people who just write shit tweets all the time.
They don't even write them, Lawrence. They copy and paste them. That's the best thing about those accounts.
Even worse. Even worse.
It's a banter arms race in many ways. They're trying to be the first out there with the banter.
You hope they blow themselves up in their own kitchen before they manage to get the banter out there. Do you know what I mean?
Laptop just blows up. Banter not allowed. Denied.
Dave, before we wrap up, is there anything you'd like to mention or bring attention to in the world of football?
There was a banner at the Fiorentina Stadium. This talks that Berdeschi was going to move to Juve. Why wouldn't you like to spit in your face, Berdeschi, you shitty hunchback.
But it's hunchback.
Blimey.
Which is pretty bad. Either the player's not signed yet or whatever. There is big beef between Fiorentina and Juve, as we do know, but they like to go far over in Florence.
Apparently so. That's quite something.
Also, at Star Sixes, the most used phrase was "wind the clock back,"
Because they're all retired.
Just because
look at him winding back the clock.
Yeah, let's also be quite frank at the moment. There's a lot of people who use footage of football right now. I have no problem with people using Star Sixes. There's a lot of people online using footage of football, and if we're completely honest, like, as a group, we've sort of made an agreement not to use footage in our videos of football. Maybe we'll use, images and stuff. I think it's quite different to using actual video. A lot of people using videos of football right now. And it's starting to annoy me. There's too many to name and shame, to be quite honest, online, Adam. Because what we're in is an industry which is currently, there's so many beg people on Twitter or whatever, and they're so desperate and they're so talentless that they, and I'm not saying that I'm talented, but there are so many talentless people out there that they're, the only thing they have is to their ripper of footage, and then they put that up online, and of course people are going to look at that and share that. But that's just such a beg approach to making football content. The reason we don't use those football clips is because we can't afford to buy them, because they cost billions or millions of pounds. Illegal, and so play fair is what I'm saying to other people at the moment. A lot of people online don't particularly pay fair. I don't mind GIFs. I don't mind like short clips. If BT have shared it and then you retweet that, fine. But there's a load of people online at the moment who are currently using footage of matches, and it's just it's not leveling a playing field. And like people are, it's a barrier to entry, the price of things. Yeah, but there's so much other stuff that you could cover, and these guys already cover footage really well. It's just, it's ridiculous. Like, I understand it's probably going to go in a good direction. It'll encourage BBC and Sky and all those guys to put their clips up online. But it's also just so beg to put up clips of games. Like, just get so a life,
big.
Mate.
I don't like this beg approach. Guys, please rate and review the podcast. Thanks so much for listening. It's been great to have you. I hope that you enjoyed.
Just stop putting the clips online, all right?
As much as we enjoyed recording it. Until next week, Lawrence McKenna, where can people find you?
You can go, if you go to FootyTube, I sometimes edit match highlights and just sort of put them up there for people.
It's great stuff.
It's actually quite handy.
It's great stuff.
I actually have no problem with FootyTube. FootyTube is actually quite handy sometimes when you're away on holiday and you want to see, Liverpool versus Indonesia in 11 or something. Do you know what I mean? So FootyTube is good. Also, just go to At The Front 3 or Lozcast and you can find me there.
D-O-B on the mic. Where can people find you?
I'm usually floating around Reddit. Football highlights. Our football highlights, honestly. I think it's the best thing I've ever done. I've watched so many games from last season there. It's been beautiful. It's been a great little break. But anyway, find me there. That's it.
Lovely stuff. Guys, you can find me on Twitter at Adam Boltwood. Follow us all at The Front 3 as well. And as I say, please.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Please rate and review the podcast. I'm not begging. Guys, we'll see you next Monday.
Bye.